FYI, this podcast contains spoilers.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 482 of the podcast that goes snicked. Snicked, I'm your host Jason, and we continue our march to 500 episodes, and we also continue our weekly coverage of the 10 lives and deaths of Wolverine, the X-Men Wolverine event that will catapult us into the next phase of X-Men comics, and we're going to keep on going. But of course, before we can jump into this week's X Lives, 10 Lives of Wolverine number 3, have to talk about the life of Wolverine number 5. This is the Marvel Unlimited Infinity comic exclusive. There's kind of a drawn out Wikipedia page of Wolverine's biographical exploits in chronological order. And so issue 5, of course, is written by Jim Zub, art by Ramon Box, colors by Hava Tartaglia, letters by VCs Joe Zabino, and production by Annie Ching and Tim Smith III. And this focuses on the time after World War I. This is chapter 5, Guided by Shadows. Not to be confused with Guided by Voices, the late 90s, early 2000s indie rock band that was very, very seminal and influential. I just remember you can listen to an album like so fast because all the songs are like 2 minutes long. But so this starts off with that. Actually, sorry, this says after World War II. I apologize. So as long as time after World War II, because remember last time he had met Captain America, we talked about that. So it talks about his time in the Devil's Brigade in World War II, fighting against Hydra, how he met Bucky, almost killed Bucky, who would later, of course, become the Winter Soldier, who would later, of course, kill Itsu. And, you know, he had some violent times in the war and after the war. Then Hiroshima, which, of course, references the BKV Logan miniseries, where he went and experienced the nuclear bomb at Hiroshima and, you know, survived because he's Logan. And then, you know, he goes back to Japan then, and that's where he meets Itsu, and where they begin to start a family together. And this is where that chapter will stop. So next time we'll see the time with Itsu, and I'm assuming, you know, her death and Dawkins' birth and Romulus and all that fun stuff, all of which, you know, ties in directly with the stories we're seeing right now and the 10 Lives of Wolverine. I almost feel like I'm beating a dead horse on grading. This one almost defies grading, but I would still give it 3 out of 6 claws. It's fine. It's informative. The art's okay. Jim Zub, I believe, and if I'm getting them mixed up again, I'm really sorry. I'm pretty sure he's the one that's going to do the new Thunderbolts book, which looks pretty fun, to be honest. So, looking forward to seeing his writing there, letting him get back to actually doing full writing on a book and to stretch his creative legs. It looks like a fun book. So, there you go, Lives of Wolverine number 5. So now we're going to jump to 10 Lives of Wolverine number 3, which is, of course, brought to us by Benjamin Percy and Joshua Cassara, with colors by Frank Martin, letters by VCs Corey Pettit, woohoo, designed by Tom Mueller, and then the cover by Adam Kubert and Frank Martin. And this cover is a doozy. I like this one a lot. So we have, like, Old West Clint Eastwood Wolverine, and he is standing in the southwest of America, it looks like, and he's got bloody bone claws and a hat with shadow over his eyes. He's got, like, a piece of straw or grass or wheat, whatever, in his mouth. He's got a poncho on. He's grabbing his belt, and he's standing on top, almost like posing like a hunter, like after the hunt, with his prize animal. But he's got his foot stomping on a wrapped up Omega Red, the bone coil. It's a pretty great cover. And then, kind of breaking up the image in the background, is Wolverine in his original costume, facing off against something like a red. It's like a slim horizontal panel, and each figure is on either side of Wolverine. So it's kind of like you have like the logo, and Wolverine's figure impedes into the bottom part of the logo. Behind the logo is the desert sky. And then you have Wolverine's figure in the center, like I said, standing on top of the coil. And then behind him is like the desert scenery and some cliffs and, you know, canyons, boots, whatever, butts, whatever. And then completely out of place, but laid out in a really cool way by Kubert, is the scene of Wolverine fighting Omega Red, kind of like in between the sky and the horizon line. It's a nice effect. And describing it, I can see where if you're not actually looking at it, it might not sound like it works, but it really does. I can very easily see this. I mean, it's really early, but this, I mean, potential Wolfie Award cover of the year nominee, maybe. So we'll see. We'll see what else comes out this year. But anyway, so we start off and some pretty kind of pessimistic, very, very Wolverine internal dialogue, you know, talking about the longer you live, you know, you kind of lose that excitement. People who have shorter lives get to treasure it more. And he's talking about how just tired he is, which is, you know, really relatable, and even for us that are just mere mortals, sometimes you just feel like stuff's just moving and moving, and you just get really, really tired. And you can't even imagine if, like, you went for hundreds and hundreds of years, just how tired you would be of fighting all the time. Obviously, you know, most of us do not go around with claws actually fighting, but life can be a fight. So anyway, then we get a nice double-page splash of Wolverine yelling. We see the Cerebro Helmet X and crackling energy, and in between, so in the X is Cowboy Wolverine on a horse fighting an Omega Red, like Bandito. And then in between the spaces of the X's, we have Wolverine, like in the time of Aladdin, like a magic lamp, and a guy in a fez, and Wolverine's original costume fighting him. And then we have a little bit of foreshadowing. We just have a pale white face with an Omega Red emblem on the forehead, and we have some black sideburn to the side. So that's interesting, and will definitely come into play. Then we have a scene from World War One, I think. Or maybe, I don't think it's the Civil War, because I don't think they had a helmet like that in the Civil War. It looks like World War One. And then, of course, our Central American scene. He says, you know, the wheel in the sky keeps on turning. And, you know, it just keeps going and going, and that's where we are. So then we go back to the 1900 Northern Canada, and we find out, we actually get Captain Xavier's first name is Benedict. So it's definitely an ancestor of Xavier, either his grandfather or great-grandfather. I think if you do the math, and you assume, even with the sliding timeline, you put Xavier born, oh gosh, let's just say, instead of him beginning the X-Men in the 60s, let's say maybe he was born in the 60s. That would have been his parents born in the 40s. Yeah, so probably like a great-grandfather, maybe. As Benedict Xavier. Anyway, the captain is mad at the mutiny, and he's going to, he shoots the first crew member, but Omega Red just jumps around. We actually see what the jump looks like, as one crew member falls, the Omega goes out on his forehead, and a red energy escapes his forehead and goes to the next guy, forming the Omega on his forehead, and Xavier just cuts through the crew, as Omega Red jumps from body to body, and Wolverine frantically on a dog sled trying to get to the ship. Remember, it's stuck in the ice. And unfortunately, the ice opens up, and his poor little huskies and dog sled fall into the icy water. And Wolverine's able to get out. But then, a really awesome scene. And pretty recently, a couple of different scenes of whale-type creatures and Wolverine looking great. But, we have a white sperm whale, like if Benedict Xavier is Moby Dick, and then here's his whale. And, I'm sorry, the whale's Moby Dick. If Benedict Xavier is Captain Ahab, then here's his whale, Moby Dick. A big white whale breaks the ice, and on his nose is a crackling red Omega symbol. And it's a great little sequence, and the whale is pissed, and he's going to try to, like, destroy the ship and destroy Xavier's ancestor. So then we find out, you know, I had said last time I wasn't really sure why Omega Red occupied Itsu. And we find out that he's just kind of pissed at Wolverine, first of all, because he's just kind of always pissed at Wolverine. But specifically this time, he's pissed because Wolverine's getting in the way of his mission to kill Xavier. So he's like, well, if every time I turn around to kill Xavier or one of his ancestors, Wolverine stops me, then I'll just go stop Wolverine. And I'll do it in a way that really, really hurts. And so that's why he jumped into Itsu. Nothing to do with Xavier, just wanted to get Wolverine out of the way. And Wolverine reaches out to Jean, says, I need you, come back in. What do we need? What can we do? What can we do to preserve Dokken? Like, if I have to kill a possessed Itsu, how do we save Dokken? Can we? And Xavier and Jean in our current present talk about it. Like, well, how do we do that? Can we back him up? Like, and clone him, even though he never existed? Which you kind of wonder. So the option they come up with, and they ultimately decide they can't do it right now because they don't know how, but they're going to, like, submit it to the Quiet Council for future, you know, reference, is, you know, we put a Cerebro in a black hole and store it there, and then it's outside of time. But the other thing I'm wondering, though, is, I mean, the whole, like, changes after the trial of Magneto with Scarlet Witch, can they not somehow use what she was doing to create a backup of Dokken that's kind of outside of time and doesn't require... I mean, it's weird because it's a time travel story anyway, and so far in Marvel, like, we don't have Back to the Future time travel. We have splintering timeline time travel, so... Which if you get too much in that, really calls the whole story into question, because if Omega Red even does succeed, all he does is create a different timeline. The timeline where he's pissed off and Xavier still lives. But then there's a timeline out there where he doesn't. But if we're going Back in the Future style, then if he, you know, Wolverine kills Itsu, then in our timeline, Dokken ceased to exist. I guess he hasn't faded from the photograph yet, so couldn't they steal what they need from him and make a backup? You know, you would think, knowing that there are, you know, outside of what's going on in this story, there's mutants with time travel capabilities. So anyone can go back and undo or redo or influence. You think they would just kind of be constant, I don't know. You get too far into the weeds on, like, backups and resurrection and then throw in a time travel element. And kind of, you kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit and really kind of just go with it. Otherwise, it stops making sense pretty quickly. So anyway, but they decide that ultimately there's nothing they can do right now for Doc, and they will try to figure it out. But then Romulus shows up and stabs Omega Itsu in a nice full-page splash, and Wolverine's like, let her go. And he's like, nope, I like this. I'm going to take care of her. And he's going to kill her. And then so we have Sage talking about timeline anomalies in our text piece. And so her projections are, you know, Itsu was injured or killed as a result of fighting Wolverine. Dokken fails to exist. Itsu was injured or killed as a result of fighting Romulus. Dokken fails to exist. Wolverine is slowed down as a result of fighting Romulus and possessed Itsu. Xavier dies. Or Wolverine is killed as a result of fighting Romulus and Itsu and calculating or collating, it says. They don't really know what to do. So, the action item. I love that there's a memo and an action item. It's so much like work. Like, this is what's going on. This is what we're going to do when this is all done. Put Cerebro in a black hole to preserve data timeline fluctuations. But then they decide they can't do it right now. And so... conclusion is Itsu cannot die or Dokken will cease to exist. Wolverine cannot stay too long and he also cannot die, or Xavier will die and Krakoa will cease to exist. A lot riding on his hairy little shoulders. So we go back to the recent past in Siberia, and Mikhail Rasputin is trying to recruit Omega Red, and Omega Red's like, you know what, Krakoa betrayed me, but Russia wasn't really all that good to me either. And that's where Mikhail is like, well, this is mutant Russia. I'm in charge of it, and I'll be good to you. And let me show you, and he stabs him with the sword. The Cerebro sword, to give him all his information. This is how they're able to send Omega Red's essence back through time, and know how they know where to find Xavier at different places is through the Cerebro sword in some nebulous way. So back to Columbia, we now have Creed is hunting down Logan on his mission. Logan shoots a big wasp hornet nest and it drops on Creed's face. And there's a really gruesome scene of Sabretooth and just hornets flying in and out of his mouth and stabbing him in the eye and Wolverine running the jungle. Joshua Cassara, by the way, was on a recent episode of House of X. And they asked him about some of his favorite things to draw and he said, he really loves the Krakoan era because he really loves drawing plants. So here we have Wolverine running, and this T-Mex days running through the jungle. And he must like drawing animals a lot too, because there's lots of plants, and there's like a chameleon, and a jaguar, and a chimpanzee, and a snake. I don't even know if Columbia has chimpanzees, but here they are. So it's pretty cool. So we go back to the Canadian frozen north, and our whale sprouts a giant Omega Red tentacle, and Wolverine, of course, jumps up, he tries to slash it, Benedict Xavier lights like a bucket of oil or something and throws it in the whale's mouth. Then we go back to Japan, where Romulus is fighting Wolverine, and she's just like eating it up. She's like, it doesn't matter what happens, no matter what happens, I win. And Wolverine basically decides he doesn't have time to mess with Romulus, goes beast mode on him, cuts him up. Romulus runs off, and Wolverine remembers this is how it happens, and, you know, now Winter Soldier will come and kill Ensign for Romulus, which we'll, you know, we'll see later. That happened. We get a nice note here. That was a Wolverine number 40, the 2003 volume. So Omega Red has also jumped out for whatever reason, and Wolverine, we have that whole like conundrum, right? Wolverine's like, well, is this why everything happened? because Romulus leaves after they fight, and he goes, I'd tell him to never come back, but I don't need to, he's going to keep his distance, he'll send the Winter Soldier to do his dirty work for him. Maybe this is even the reason all that happens. I'm not going to pretend to understand the math of it all. What's done is done. It's just really, you know, Wolverine just kind of trying to figure out what's going on, but also not too worried about, like, he's on his mission. Then Jean pulls Xavier's out. I'm sorry. And then Jean pulls Wolverine out. And then we go back to our Central American story, and Wolverine's fighting a giant anaconda. And we see Xavier giving a press conference. Wolverine's trying to find his way there. And he and Jean are both scanning the crowd and the jungle for Omega Red, and they can't find him. And then suddenly, Wolverine is possessed by Omega Red. And an awesome full-page splash to end the book of Wolverine being possessed. And he pops his bone claws and his bone tentacles all at the same time. And he says, I'm the one we should be afraid of. And it's like, I did not see it coming. I mean, well, I kind of did. So, I knew something like that was going to happen just based on the first double-page splash where we had the... It was just a tiny little forehead, but the sideburns kind of gave it away. That there was going to be maybe a part of the story where Wolverine himself was possessed. And at the end, we get it. It's still very, very effective. And, you know, you look at this last page, and you kind of feel like both Benjamin Percy and Joshua Cassara are waiting for you to go, oh, badass, oh, shit. And Benjamin Percy and Joshua Cassara, whether you're listening or hear this from someone else, that's what I did. I said, oh, badass, oh, shit. Like, it's great. It's a great ending to the story. I will say, maybe the splash page was a little bit too much of a tease, But other than that, like, reading the first two issues, I did not think, oh, well, obviously we're going to have Omega Red possess Wolverine. Not something I really thought of. So in that effort, or instance, it was a surprising, to an extent, and just, you know, because you saw it in the splash page, you kind of knew it, maybe it was coming at some point. And then to get it at the end of the book in Central America and in the T-Rex uniform is visually awesome, and it just looks really, really good. So, I'm still really, really digging this book. Art's great, story's great. Not as much to maybe chew on in this issue, but, I mean, we got to see little brief scenes. Really enjoy the Old West scene, this on the cover and in the center of the X in the double page spread. Would like to see more of that if we get a chance, but we may not. I know some of it's just kind of like, wouldn't it be cool if, and they get to draw it for a minute, and it's not really germane to the story, and that's fine. That's cool. But yeah, man, I'm really, really digging this. It plays into Wolverine's history well. It's fun. It's nonstop. It's moving. You know, it's emotional. You have him worried about Dawkin and preserving that through the fight. And luckily he's able to. But, yeah, just another really, really good comic so far. I'm going to give 10 Lives of Wolverine number 3, 6 out of 6 claws. So that's going to take us to Thor number 22. Which is God of Hammers, Part 4 of 5, written by Donnie Cates, art by Nick Klein, colors by Matt Wilson, letters and design by VC's Joe Savino, and the cover is by Nick Klein. The cover's not bad. We have Thor and his Animal Avengers, which is Throg, Lockjaw, and Bats the Ghost Hound. And then behind them, we have Wolverine, Iron Man, Doctor Strange, Captain America, Angela, Spider-Man, and Captain Marvel. Now, our front line looks really good. Behind that, Iron Man looks pretty cool, and the energy around his hand. I don't really like Nick Klein's Wolverine. And that's going to be true inside the book as well. It's an okay cover. So, the gist of God of Hammer so far is, you know, Thor has been king of Asgard. He's been struggling with the hammer, and at one point he loses it. And we find out from the previous issues of the story that, you know, when Mjolnir was thrown into the sun, it bonded with the energy there that was Mangog, which, you know, of course, Jane Thor threw into the sun as well. And kind of got, it always kind of had a little bit of consciousness, and we find out, you know, through this issue that, you know, kind of what happened there. But basically, Mangog and Mjolnir kind of combine, and the hammer, like, turns into an entity. Like, just a full-fledged, walking-around entity. And so, Beta Ray Bill comes with some warriors. He's going to try to help save Thor from this Mjolnir entity, and he calls on everyone who's ever helped Thor, and that, of course, includes Wolverine. And he says, you know, today the thunder dies. And we have lots of cool things. We have Doctor Strange, the Fantastic Four, Valkyrie, Captain Marvel, Volstagg, Freya on her giant war cat, which reminds me so much of Panthor from Masters of the Universe. Iron Man, Spider-Man, Angela, our pets, Man-Thing. Today the thunder dies. Today the thunder died. They were singing, bye, bye. Hammer? I don't know. What? That's stupid. Anyway. So we're in Broxton, Oklahoma, which, of course, is a place very near and dear to Thor's heart, because Asgard once floated above it. And we're fighting our giant electric monster that is Mangog and Mjolnir combined. And Thor's not doing so hot. And Odin's not doing so hot. But then our heroes show up, and man, I've really been enjoying Nick Klein's art on this book so far. This picture of our heroes, and particularly of Wolverine, just doesn't look, his style does not fit Wolverine, I don't think. But yeah, they all show up, and, you know, they're yelling, and Mjolnir kind of blows them up, and says, you know, I'm a hammer, and all you are nails. and all I see are nails. And our heroes try to fight back, but Thor calls on his true mother, Gaia. Forget Phoenix, forget Freya. Is Gaia is his true mother, Mother Earth. And he pulls his power, the god of the storm, and creates like this stormy tornado. And it knocks the heroes down, but it knocks the villain down for a minute as well. And then Thor really powers up. He bonds with the Earth. He's yelling at Mjolnir. And we find out that this entity, Mjolnir's entity, has been behind all the bad stuff that's been happening, including the Donald Blake storyline, which we had just recently. Which is a pretty cool storyline, where basically Donald Blake was freed from this, like, euphoric, kind of like afterlife world he was stuck in. And then he found out that, you know, he was created just as a trick, and got really mad and tried to enact his revenge. And really, Mjolnir says it's all Odin's fault. You know, even she was like this wild cosmic storm, and Odin, like, trapped her and confined her to a Uru hammer and pretty much enslaved her and really didn't think about what she needed and just made her Thor's hammer. And Odin even kind of says, I'm sorry. Like, they're not wrong. Then he begins to die, but as he dies, he passes on, he says, as much as I've given you, the only way for you to get to full Odin force is for me to be gone. And he dies, and Thor gets the full Odin force. And talking has not worked. He hasn't been able to talk Mjolnir out of their perverted sense of justice. And so now we have full Odin power Thor, and his fist is glowing, and he has a glowing sword. And he says, now we put the hammer down. And it's to be concluded. So my complaint about... So Nick Klein's art is kind of sketchy and pretty gritty. And it's worked pretty well in this book with, like, the magical, mystical stuff and the warrior stuff and the fantasy stuff. I don't know. I'm not saying, like, he couldn't do, like, just a regular superhero book. But some of his kind of more regular... Because it's not just Wolverine. Like, his Mr. Fantastic looks a little weird, too. Maybe it's just preferences on the characters. I guess Captain America is not my favorite. But overall, though... The book looks really good. I'm really enjoying this story. I know. Georgie from the Excalibur is not a Cates fan. Kind of refers to everything he does as kind of new metal. New NU with the umlaut. Which obviously is it. Mostly, you know, I'm trying to be less snotty about my musical taste and criticisms. I will say... A good friend of mine, Blake, who's kind of my musical soulmate, we've been, well, until the last couple of years, had been playing in various bands together since, like, 1995. So we've a solid almost, like, 25 years of us playing together. And, you know, life has taken, you know, by the time we had Emmett, the third kid, I have not done a whole lot of playing, and I'm not going to play much in Blake. But anyway, we text back and forth and talk all the time, and, you know, kind of joking with him, and, of course, Cameron Sinclair, friend of the show, occasional flashback host. Hi, Cameron. Just kind of about how, you know, who's in charge of nostalgia right now. So people, I've seen a whole lot of, like, articles and links and stuff about how new metal is not as bad as you remember it to be. And, you know, I realize it's because the people who are kind of at the age of deciding what is good nostalgia or what kind of might come back in fashion grew up on that. Because I was a little old for new metal. Like, your Limp Bizkits and your Korns and your stuff. Like, I was pretty much already in college, and I was like, no thanks. But if you were, like, in middle school, I can't fault you for that being your jam. Like, you know, there was a lot of good music when I was in middle school, but there was also a lot of crap that I liked that does not stand the test of time. You know, kind of the second-tier, B-level grunge stuff from the early to mid-90s, a lot of it's just not very good. Like, the classics, like, the really good stuff still is pretty good. I mean, that's probably a generational thing as well. Anyway, this is not the podcast that goes music history, so I will get back to Wolverine. Anyway, I don't love Cates. I don't hate Cates. I like him. I think he's a good writer. I think he does some stuff I really like. I've enjoyed most of the 22 issues of Thor so far. And I'm going to give Thor number 22 5 out of 6 claws. So, there you go. Alright, so the only thing I really have left to talk about is I know we're pretty short. It's going to be a short episode. Sorry, guys. Maybe I can squeeze another flashback out or something. Or try to actually get with you at Scalabros and get some other new X-Men comics out in your ears. But I do want to kind of confirm, because I've been talking about Devil's Reign a little bit in Superior 4. And according to the text, like, introduction of Superior 4 number 2, these are indeed actual versions of Otto. I guess Otto, like the Ghost Rider, the Hulk, and the Wolverine, I guess Otto Howlett, Otto Banner, Otto Blaze, not Otto Octavius, possessing those heroes of that timeline. It's like, it's a weird way to play with the alternate, like with the multiverse, because it's not different versions of Otto Octavius. It's Otto other people. Excuse me, which is weird. Anyway, so I probably won't spend as much time on that. And won't really I didn't really enjoy this Superior 4 book that much, so we're going to jump to something else. Let's talk a little bit, speaking of Donny Cates, and maybe siding a little bit more with Georgie, Hulk number 4 came out. no spoilers on how I felt about it. This is, let me get back to the front on this one. This is Smashtronaut Part 4 by Donny Cates and Ryan Ottley, with inks by Cliff Rathburn and colors by Frank Martin. Man, Frank Martin's a busy guy. And awesome colors. Well-deserved busyness, but he's doing a lot. Letters by VC's Corey Pettit. Woohoo! And then, of course, the cover is by Ryan Ottley and Romulo Fajardo Jr. And the cover is our giant Hulk in a tiny white background with giant, giant monsters attacking him. So remember when we left off on the last one? Our Hulk, who's David Banner, driving a... I'm still not sure if it's... I said David Banner, TV show. Bruce Banner driving a giant Hulk, or a tiny Bruce Banner driving a normal-sized Hulk, kind of through time and space. And he's come to a universe where Thunderbolt Ross is the president, and the whole world has been gamma irradiated, and they got to stop him. So, in this universe, there's a gamma Hulk Buster armor, and it killed all the heroes to get them out of the way. And there's he kills the X-Men, Wolverine, and Cyclops. He actually blasts Cyclops' head off. I will say one thing about this book. You know, Ryan Ottley doing Amazing Spider-Man had to play within the web, so to speak. If you miss, like, Ryan Ottley's, like, just uber-graphic Invincible art, like, just really, really violent, really brutal, almost, like, Extreme Studios level violence. This whole book is letting him cut loose with that. This scene of Cyclops getting his head blown off is extremely vivid. There's, like, blood and brain matter shooting all over the place, and his visor flying through the air where his head should be. So Thunderbolt Ross and his gamma creatures basically destroy any opposition. So our Hulk decides, well, I'll go oppose them. And he's going to go fight them. And so he jumps down, and he's fighting. And we see another thing where, you know, because the whole idea is the Hulk persona is inside the engine room of this Hulk vehicle. And Banner, like, creates simulations to make him more and more less mad. So we have stage 4 now is Marvel Zombies. And, of course, we have a Wolverine in there as well. And the Hulk starts fighting through the Marvel Zombies. In real life, he's taking a pretty good beating. But then Thunderbolt Ross sends his secret weapon. It was this version's Bruce Banner's apprentice, Peter, then we know what that's going to be, and they drop him out of a plane. He's in handcuffs and a hood, but as he falls, of course, he hulks out, and when he lands, he's a giant, hulky spider creature. So, art's pretty great in this book. I didn't really care for this issue as much. It was okay. Didn't really, like, grab me or pique my interest too much, so I'm going to have Hulk number 4, 3 out of 6 claws. It was fun to see, you know, Otley draw Wolverine if he died in this universe. And then the Marvel, like, his little panel of all the Marvel zombie stuff looked pretty great. Like I said, art and colors especially, all great. The issue was just kind of flat for me, kind of boring. So, Hulk number 4, 3 out of 6 claws, and that's going to do it. So, I know we're short this week, but that's okay. That's part of the risk of going weekly is sometimes I don't have quite as much to say. But yeah, there you go. So hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll be back, if nothing else, at least next week for 10 Deaths number 3. Alright, for the podcast that goes Snick, you can like the Facebook page. Twitter is at SnickCast. Show notes and stuff are snickcast.podbean.com. And please, everyone out there, stay well, stay safe. We'll talk again soon. All right, hugs and snick, y'all. Bye-bye. And snacked.